Hi, welcome back to Mosaics. I'm Holly Beach, your host with the Idaho Office for Refugees. And today we're going to hear from a team of researchers at Boise State University who are researching Global Gardens, which is a program of IOR, of farmers who grow locally here and sell spray-free produce to the public. So I'm really excited to hear about their experiences with the farmers and what they're hoping to learn through their research. So please join me in welcoming Lisa Morato. She's the program lead of the Global Studies program at BSU, and she's brought two students who are also working on the research project with her, Alice Mwamba and Macy Matravers. So welcome to the three of you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I would like to go around and just give us all an opportunity to kind of learn more about each other. Alice, let's start with you.
I'm a refugee from the DRC, and I'm a nursing major at Boise State University, and I'm minoring in refugee studies.
Thank you.
I'm from Boise. I'm a student at Boise State, and I'm majoring in ethnic studies with a minor in refugee studies.
Lisa, you might remember from our other conversation on a different episode about her work in global studies, but Lisa, give us a little bit about yourself too.
Yeah, hi. My name is Dr. Lisa Morato, associate professor in the School of Public Service, and I work in the Global Studies and Environmental Studies programs. I am one member of a research team that is doing a project with Global Gardens.
So what brought the idea about to do a research project with Global Gardens?
Yeah, so this was a really cool project. It was really developed in partnership between Boise State researchers and Global Gardens, as well as the city of Boise. So Boise State issued these grand challenges, and it was through the Resource Nexus for Sustainability. A member of our research team, Laura Villegas-Ortiz, had been talking with Global Gardens, and they sort of had this like idea of doing a research project, trying to understand like what are some of the stressors that farmers face, how do they adapt to change, and what different types of knowledge are they bringing to farming here in Boise. Dr. Rebecca Sam Castellano and Dr. Kelly Hopping and I are the three primary researchers from Boise State that have been leading this project. One of the most like exciting parts about this project, in addition to the research that we're doing, is that we had a chance to work with really amazing undergraduate research assistants. Doesn't happen all that often that you can have such a large team of student researchers, but they've been really central and essential to us getting the research completed.
So I think you're about halfway through the research project, if I understand correctly. How long have you been working on it?
We're more than halfway. So we've been working on this for about a year. Okay. And we're getting closer and closer to finishing data collection. And that means we're doing interviews and surveys. We're using a technique called PhotoVoice, which I can talk about later. So we've been working hard all spring and all summer to collect data. And then at some point this fall, we'll switch into data analysis.
Okay. Alice, what does your role look like on the project? What kind of activities do you do?
My role includes meeting up with participants, making phone calls to schedule like surveys, photo voices, and like interviews, and just like data collection and making those connections with them. Or honestly, just going out and helping them at their farms.
They put you to work?
No, I volunteered to help.
Yes, they do.
They're like, I'll tell you stuff if you pick those carrots.
Yeah, that's pretty much right.
I've done some weeding on farms, which has been fun.
Well, I was going to ask how you break the ice or build trust when you're a researcher with somebody. So maybe that's the key. It's just start pitching in.
I think so. And this is the first qualitative research project that I've been on. And so I was pretty intimidated at first, but everyone has been really kind. And I do think that breaking the ice most of the time happens with getting to work with people, putting your hands in the dirt. And that has been really fun.
How do you handle the different languages? Are there people available to interpret for you, or do you use English most often?
Do you want to answer that?
Honestly, for me, I do speak Swahili. So if they speak Swahili, I'm able to like translate and kind of communicate with them that way. But if not, we do try to find a translator if possible. There is some members of Global Garden who are multilingual, so they help out sometimes. And sometimes we just can't really communicate effectively, so we try to like schedule an appointment or seeing if we can find someone to be able to translate.
Is that special for you to be able to speak in Swahili with them and have that connection?
Yeah, I definitely think there's like a connection when you speak in a different language. I feel like it makes it like less stressful because some do speak English, but it's not like super well. So they're kind of uncomfortable in English. But once you switch over to Swahili, they definitely feel more like comfortable and more willing to share.
And can probably actually articulate exactly what they want to say instead of just the generalities.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. What have you learned so far, or maybe an interaction that you've had that has really stuck with you so far in the project?
I can start with that while you guys are thinking of something. I think like one thing that I've learned that is really exciting is that many farmers have expressed how important it is to be out farming for their health, for their physical health and their mental health, and just like the importance of being connected to the land where they are. And that's just been, it's been kind of a recurring theme throughout the time that we've been out talking to people. And it's a really powerful testament to how important, you know, we often think about how important the food that they grow is to Boise, but thinking about how these farms are important to the farmers as well.
Mm. That's a really good point.
And kind of adding on to that, a lot of the farmers that we've worked with have started, well, they did start farming in their home countries, and then being able to bring that here to a new place, I think is really important. And also, I know if you grow food that you wouldn't be able to find at a grocery store, which is just really cool to me.
I'm trying to remember last time I visited the farm, one of the farmers had, is it elephant garlic? Am I saying, is that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, I haven't heard of that one.
Mm-hmm.
And last year I did a CSA, the Community Supported Agriculture. So every week I would go and get my pickup of produce. And sometimes there were things in there that I didn't even recognize. And Global Gardens would send out a little newsletter like, here's what you can do. Or like, got a lot of beets all of a sudden. Here's what you can do with those. So it is cool to have that exposure to different kinds of produce. Mm-hmm. What about you, Alice?
The biggest thing for me has definitely been the connections I've been able to make with the farmers. Like all throughout my education journey, I definitely feel like connections is one of the things I'll remember the most. And like the connections that the farmers have with their land, with the other farmers, with Global Garden, the city of Boise, I definitely feel like that's been like the most interesting to see. And also like the most like motivational thing for me to continue studying this type of population. So important.
Macy, you were mentioning many farmed in their home countries before coming here. What home countries are represented in this group of farmers?
You might be able to help me with this too. DRC. There's a lot.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm not sure of the total list, but like very diverse population.
That's cool. Yeah. And I know they have over a dozen farmers who are like the entrepreneurial farmers as their own business, selling to restaurants and markets and directly to customers. And then there's also the community garden piece where I think over 100 people have access to that. And it's more for growing for your family, your community, having a space to be outside and connect with the land. Are you looking into both or more of the business side of things?
We're definitely looking into both. And it's been really fascinating to see the differences like in the crops that people are growing. So the farmers that are growing more for market tend to grow things that they think and know that consumers want, whereas at the community garden, there's more like foods that you would have at home. Lots of beautiful stories about food sharing. So, you know, even to family out of state, but just like sharing with their community and having access to foods that, that they're familiar with is a really important part of that community, the community farm.
ultimately, what do you hope this all leads to? Is there a goal? Maybe Alice, you can start with this. You're doing a lot of work, and I know you're a nursing major, so it's not like you need more work in your life. So why does this matter to you? What do you hope it does?
I think it just brings more awareness to the issue, because I know farming is big within like the refugee population, and a lot of them just do it in their backyards. So I hope something like this makes it so they can actually do it for a living, because I think a lot of people do have the passion for it, but they just don't think it's possible. Because something else I've also noticed is like people feel like they're not like farmers. And like Idaho, there's like big farmers, so they definitely feel like discouraged. So definitely like bring more awareness to it, and also just to make the program grow and ultimately become better so that people keep coming back.
That's interesting you say they don't feel like they're farmers. And I noticed, I used to be a reporter and I would cover ag. And I noticed a lot of small farms in my time covering it closing, and I would interview them and they would say it's really hard to compete with the big business as things start to conglomerate. So have you had conversations where you see people start to shift in that mindset and really feel more like farmer?
Yes, to a point. If they solve for like to the community, they definitely start seeing themselves more. But like just some interactions I've had at some of the markets, they like definitely do still feel like they're not as big as some of the other people in Idaho, but they're definitely starting to get there.
What about you, Macy? What do you hope comes out of this project?
Boise has an incredible refugee population, and there's so many amazing programs through the Idaho Office for Refugees, and so I agree with Alice. I think making people more aware of these programs that do exist. And I'm interested in immigration law and working in Boise. So it's just been important to me to get to know the populations that I might one day be working with.
That's awesome. That is a big need right now. So that's very cool.
I think for me, one of the most important parts and the coolest part of this project is that it's a collaboration between Boise State, Global Gardens, and the city of Boise. And so we really hope that the research that we do, we can give this information back to Global Gardens and to the city of Boise to find ways to support the farmers in the best way that we can. And so a lot of times when you're doing research, you're just kind of thinking about like the academic article that you're going to write. That's part of your job. But like this project is very much with the community, with the aim of giving that data back to the community to help help them address any challenges that they have and help them. You know, we ask the farmers questions about like what would make farming easier for you? Do you have challenges in transportation? Would you want more land to farm? And so we can give that information back. And to Alice's point, like just support this awesome project and keep the farmers who are there and hopefully even grow the program, because it's important for the city of Boise to have this local food source. And it's important to the farmers to have that experience to practice farming as they wish.
It's nice, too, to see the land preserved in an urban space. The green space, I know, is a big component of mental health in communities. And this is like a really cool way of preserving something that's a hot commodity. So it takes intention to preserve something like that. So I think that's cool to see the different organizations that have come together to let their land be used for this purpose and preserve that space for something like this.
Yeah, I don't know if it was true for you two, but I didn't know that. Well, two of the farms I'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just kind of shocking that there was so much agriculture happening, like just a few minutes from my office and my home.
Yeah, right in the midst of my favorite trailhead, there's a farm, a Global Gardens farm, right next to it. And I love going hiking and seeing how his vegetables are doing. And it's just a cool reminder. What were some of the, maybe you two can speak to this too, you had asked about what would be really helpful for you as a farmer, or what challenges are you facing? What were some of the highlights of the answers?
I think a lot of people want more land. That's a common theme that I've heard. And also, I think the irrigation, I think, is maybe another topic that has come up multiple times.
Yeah, this summer must have been brutal for irrigation. Yep. So hot.
Yes.
Yeah, I've definitely heard those too. And I've also heard just like adjusting to like Boise's weather, because it's not very consistent, especially with like the fires and the smoke and when they can be out there safely and when they can't. So that's definitely been.
Yeah. And I've heard multiple people talk about how when they first started in Boise years ago, they would be able to start planting earlier in the year. And each year it kind of gets later and later and later, which is interesting.
I think this year we had that freak snow in May, right? Or was it early June?
Yes.
And people, like, I know a lot of people who just grow their own gardens lost a lot of plants. And I was really worried about our farmers at that time.
Yep.
And then, like you said, the smoke today as we talk, I think all of us have a little bit of a scratch in our voice. And I just can't imagine the time you need to spend for anyone who works in agriculture during this season. And it's becoming more smoky longer. So that's, yeah, that's definitely a big challenge. What's the solution, Lisa, to that one?
Well, I don't have a solution to climate change. But, I mean, one of the goals of this research is to understand how farmers are adapting to change, right? So whether, and there's literature that looks at, like, immigrant populations as being more flexible and like in particular in agriculture. And so we're kind of, one of the things we're asking the farmers with Global Gardens is like, how did you take what you knew as a farmer in your home country and apply that to what you're doing here? And throughout that process of like the interviews and the surveys, we're also learning like how they're adapting to this. So I'm sure that smoke and heat are going to be like big themes in when we finish this research, because that's just been front and center. But hopefully by the way that we've collected the data, we get to learn from the farmers like how they can adapt to these changes and how we can support them.
Yeah, I noticed this year the Idaho Immigrant Resource Alliance had drop-off sites, including one at Radio Boise, all summer for supplies for the farm workers and people who work in agriculture. To help get them through the hot and smoky season. But it's definitely an unsettling, frightening health concern for anyone that needs to work outside. What has been, Alice, I'll come back to you. Do you have a moment or like a highlight or a connecting moment that really, you don't have to name the farmer, but that really stood out to you and kind of made you want to keep working in this and made it worth it?
Definitely when I'm out helping one of the farmers, like just helping them harvest fruits or vegetables, I definitely say those types of moments are definitely the best, because they're so appreciative and know how much like, oh, we're also in school. Like we have other stuff we do, but we choose to be there, especially if it's like early in the morning. Those have definitely been like some of the best moments for me.
I think one of my concerns initially was just I know how busy everyone is, and I never wanted to try to schedule an interview or do anything that would take away from people's time. But there's been a couple times where I've just stopped by and people get excited that we're there, and that has just meant a lot to me, that we've kind of taken the time to build those connections where people are excited when we're there. And that has meant a lot to me.
Yeah, it's always nerve-wracking for me sometimes at first. Like even interviewing here, you want to build that trust and that connection and break the ice. And if it's someone that you've never met before and I'm here to ask you all these questions, it can feel kind of awkward at first. So until you start to build, that's cool that you were able to build those relationships. Do you tend to each have, like, I'm going to work with this farmer the whole project, or do you work with, like, you switch and
people? We all switch. We all work with a lot of people.
What about you? What's been a highlight for you?
I mean, I think working with the team of students has been a highlight for me. As a qualitative researcher, like, I do feel participant observation and interviews, and have been working with agricultural workers for many years. But sometimes that can be like a little bit lonely, and having a bigger research team is just, it makes it more fun. It makes it more real. Like there's other people that are experiencing this at the same time. And so I think that's been an awesome part of it. In terms of working with the farmers, I've loved seeing so many like family operations. So people that work with their kids or their spouse or their sister, there's just these really amazing networks that people have and how they support each other. That's been really nice to see. And then, yeah, just to echo that, like, the farmers have been so generous with their time. Like, they are working many jobs. They don't just farm. Like, many of them work night jobs and then get up and or don't get up. They go straight from their night job to farming. And for them to be willing to take some time out of their day to talk with us and, you know, just let us follow them around sometimes and observe what they're doing. It's just really very generous of them.
Yeah. I know there's this one farmer and she always makes our office the best food. Like whenever she comes by, you know, it's a good day and just shares freely with us. It's just so generous and warm. So that's very cool.
Yeah, I will say I did come home with a lot of vegetables this summer that were amazing.
They're all the time, so good. All the time.
Oh, they're so
hard
good.
Hard to leave empty-handed, I think. Yep.
I miss my CSA. I loved the times when we would get kale and potatoes in the CSA. Mm-hmm. And I would make like a soup, and they were just so much better. Mm-hmm. So good.
What's your favorite vegetable that you got to take home this summer?
I've gotten a lot of kale. And I've gotten a lot of radishes. And the radishes are so good.
I love radishes.
Good. Yes. Until now, I don't think I had ever really enjoyed radishes. But I do now.
For me, it has definitely been sour leaf. Like, in my culture, we, like, blend it up and make it kind of like a soupy texture. So that definitely has been the best thing. Because normally we buy it frozen because not many people grow it. Yeah. So it's like, I've only known it as frozen until one of the farmers was like, oh, this is this. They say this in Lingala. I'm like, oh, I know what that is. So definitely that has been like the best.
It's exciting. And then when you prepare it, do you eat it warm?
Yes.
Okay. Because I do remember that from visiting Kenya. Like they made the best like warmed greens. And I was like, I never had that before. So good. What's your favorite vegetable?
Well, I'm a big fan of kale, and I have come home with a lot of kale.
Do you make the kale chips in the oven?
I think that the kale, when it comes fresh like that, I don't.
No.
No, because I just like toss it with olive oil and salt and lemon, and it just tastes so good.
Sorry, Macy, I know we're hungry.
I'm like, guys, don't listen.
it's remarkable. You know, I'll share the food with my kids, and it's like you said, like you've never really tasted a radish. They're just like, oh, that's what this tastes like. Like I had no idea. So like the flavor is just so intense and so good. So,
and I'm impressed they all do it all spray free.
Mm-hmm.
To manage the weeds and the bugs. Did they talk much about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of our questions on our survey and that we talk about in interviews is like, how do you manage pests? And I'm just like pretty in awe that they just do. Like it's and maybe you guys have a different impression, but it's just how they've always farmed, and no one's like asking to use spray or to do anything but what they're doing.
Yeah, I've heard a couple people talk about not using spray and just tell me it's healthier. It's healthier. I want to be healthy. And that's just really interesting.
Did any of their techniques for managing the weeds or the bugs stand out to you?
I don't think anyone likes weeds. And when I first started, I would offer, like, if we can just talk, how can I help? And a lot of people would say, we need to do the weeds. So I've done some weeding, but anything stood out to you?
No. They just say they really, really don't like it. And a lot of them, as I just said, they just have to use their hands and get it done. That's like the only way they can.
Mm. so much dedication that goes into everything that we eat. I would love to have a farmer on here. We've tried. Like you said, they're very busy, mm-hmm. and I want to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want someone to feel like, well, why isn't the farmer's voice included? I definitely would love to have that, and maybe someday we will when it's not peak season,
yes.
To hear from them. And I've enjoyed any chance I've gotten to interact and speak with them.
Yeah, I mean, this is not first person, obviously, but one of the research methods that we're using is something called photo voice. And it's where we give the farmers a camera and ask them to take pictures of what they're growing. And then we go back with the pictures and then they describe what they've taken pictures of. And so we're hoping that through some of the methods that we're doing, that like we really let their voices mm-hmm. come to the surface and not, you know, through someone else's filter, but as much as possible to just let their own voices.
Yeah.
We're going to do in February, there's going to be an exhibit at the Luminary at Boise State where we'll put some of those pictures up and have some of our research findings. And we're hoping we can get some of the farmers to come to that, but it'll be open to everyone. It's a chance to see what we learned.
Oh, that's so cool. I'll definitely have to share information when that gets closer. Yeah, that'd be great to maybe have some farmers come on the podcast before that and share how it was for them. Is the photo voice thing, can they record voice memos on it too? Or like videos of themselves?
The way that we're doing it is taking pictures, and then when they talk, we print them out. And then when they talk about them, we record their voice.
Okay.
So we do audio recordings.
See, I really love that because I'm trying to keep growing and shifting my mindset. I come from a print media background. I like things in writing. I love to write. And then I'm like, oh, a lot of people like oral a lot better. And so asking them to fill out a form or write a paragraph might not be the most effective way to let them really shine. And so any tools like that that allow for voice memos, video memos, I'm trying to branch out and do more of those kind of things.
Yeah, how's photo voice going for both of you?
I really enjoyed it because I think people get really excited when they take pictures. And it's been interesting from a researcher perspective too, because I think a lot of the pictures that they end up taking are ones that I wouldn't have even thought of. And so I think that's why it's really powerful to have their voice and their perspective.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I feel like the farmers, sometimes you have to, like, when we're doing, like, the photo portion, because we try to do them on separate days, they're, like, trying to explain what they're taking, and I'm just like, we have to wait a little bit, and then they just want to, like, explain everything. So they're definitely excited about it and being able to, like, have a voice in this project as well. Yeah. So,
when you were doing your prep work for the research, what kind of training did you get on, like, allowing their voices to shine or how to approach the situation in a culturally informed way? Like, did you get some good advice on how to do those things?
Yeah, we had team meetings multiple times before we ever interacted with people out in the field. And yeah, I think this project is also special because we're kind of working with our mentors through every step of the way. So, I mean, I've never felt unprepared because I don't know. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I've never felt unprepared either.
How about you? Did you learn any helpful techniques to bring into this work when it comes to just like cultural awareness or trauma-informed research, connecting that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something we have to think about working with this population. Certainly trauma has come up in interviews and in conversations with farmers. I think, you know, just some like practical things that we've done as a team, like we try to go out in groups of two, which helps to kind of like overcome that like that initial sort of like approach to a farmer to ask them to participate in the project. But overall, I mean, I feel like I said before, we've just been, really welcomed. It was essential that we were partnering with Global Gardens, 'cause they were able to facilitate a lot of, opportunities to meet with different farmers and introduce us. And I mean, it's clear that like the farmers just appreciate the support that they get from Global Gardens. And so I think like that helps us in terms of research because they have trust in the staff of Global Gardens, and therefore that made them a little bit more open to us.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys work with Jordan?
Yep. Yes.
Oh, Jordan. I love him. Always making the funniest videos with Sophia on her Instagram page. I love
They're
it.
The best.
So fun. Well, thank you all for sharing today. Is there anything you'd want to leave listeners with as we wrap up?
I think so. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. We're excited to eventually share the results of this study with the local community. And hopefully, I know Boise in general is super supportive of our urban farmers, and we hope we can be one more little piece of support in there.
Mm, that's great.
But it's been really fun. Been a great, great project.
And I'll be sure to share in our like on our socials and newsletter and our calendar on the Idaho Office for Refugees website. When we get closer to February, I'll be sure to help share that out because I think that's really cool that the community has a chance to come interact with it too and potentially meet some of the farmers. You can buy from Global Gardens farmers if you go to local farmers markets. And I think the season's wrapping up, but in the spring, check back for our CSA program opening up and you can sign up for 18 weeks of produce every week that you can pick up directly from your farmer in a location that works for you. So that's a really good deal and really great produce. So that's a fun way to support the program too. So with that, I will let us go eat lunch. Talking about food for lunch hour. But thanks, everybody. Really appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining the conversation. For more information on how to be involved with refugee resettlement, please visit idahorefugees.org. Mosaics is produced by the Idaho Office for Refugees with grant support from the MJ Murdoch Charitable Trust. Music by the Afrosonics. Production in partnership with SB Studios.